All right, it is secondhand dream car time. Welcome to the Dan Time Podcast. I am Dan McArdle, your host, and this is episode number 55, featuring Canadian Folk Music Award nominee Dana Wiley, whom you may recall from episode number 27 of this project, and notable Edmonton producer Harry Gregg. Harry's the bassist for Secondhand Dream Car, and Dana fronts this nine-piece supergroup on vocals and keyboards. If you missed the original Dana Wiley episode, dial it back as we go deep into Dana's career and pursuits. Harry Gregg is also an engineer and producer at Riverdale Recorders. Growing up, Harry played violin, piano, bass, clarinet, guitar, and trombone, and he also sang in choirs and musicals. Since 2011, Harry has produced more than 30 full-length records and recorded and mixed many more albums and singles for artists in a variety of genres. He produced Dana's last three solo records, 2014's The Sea in the Sky, 2017's The Earth That You're Made Of, and last year's double album, How Much Muscle. Harry also produced Dana's classic country duet record with Sammy Volkov, The Day Had to Come. Canadian Beats wrote, "Simply put, The Day Had to Come is one of the best records you'll hear this year." Secondhand Dream Car is quickly piling up the praise. Cups and Cakes wrote, "Wiley, she sounds like she was born to sing these kinds of tunes." Beach House Mag wrote, "This debut song, speaking of Eight of Spades, from the nine-piece Soul Roots Superband, is an absolute gem." And Good Music Radar wrote, "Secondhand Dream Car is, quote, dreamy contemporary blues that you'll want to listen to for days." The debut album, Answer the Call, comes out in just 8 weeks on Friday, October 11th. The debut single, Eight of Spades, and the brand new song, Lay Down the Load, are available for download wherever you find new music. Visit secondhanddreamcar.com. I love their candor, the humor. I think you will too. This is a fun conversation. Let's preview the new track, Lay Down the Load, and then get to the conversation with Dana Wiley and Harry Gregg from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada's very own Secondhand Dream Car. You've been listening for a while and you listened to the Dana Wiley episode back in January, and you've maybe downloaded some of her music and found a connection there. This is going to be an extra dose of Dana with some sprinkles on top. I don't mean to refer to another individual as just sprinkles, but
I'll take it, Dan. I'll take it.
There are worse things to be than sprinkles.
Yeah.
But this is a natural follow-up. I've actually missed a couple things on the Dana Wiley timeline because it's been such a busy year. But I've got goosebumps just about here. A great pleasure on my part to introduce to you Dana Wiley once again and producer Harry Gregg. And they are 2/9 of the Edmonton, Alberta, Canada supergroup Secondhand Dream Car. Thank you, Harry and Dana, for being here. How are you both doing today?
Pretty good, Dan.
Yeah, I haven't been awake for all that long. I just had a student here, like a singing student, and I probably woke up about 10 minutes before they showed up. So I'm still a little bit, that's just a full disclosure comment.
Yeah, I got my morning coffee on the go here, so I'm quickly getting up to speed.
Let's start off with a nonsense question from the out the gate. What is your coffee strength? Do you like bold, medium, the breakfast blend? I'll start with Harry.
Well, I could get into this topic for quite some time, to be honest with you. I sort of enjoy a range of coffees. I'm quite into the new wave of coffee, so I think probably my favorite thing is like some sort of really like incredibly interesting tasting light roast coffee made as a pour over. Mm. Quite often, being one person and wanting a coffee in a hurry, what I do is my wife got me a nice espresso machine 5 years ago or so. So I just make myself an Americano. Probably has 4 shots of espresso in it. That's kind of how I start my day. At the studio, we have a Mocha Master, which is like a great drip coffee machine. So I'll make that when I go into work and chip away at it. Hopefully people will show up and help me drink a pot. Usually it's at least Scott, my partner. Dana, you had some on Monday when I saw you.
It's good coffee at the studio you have there. Yeah. We went through several bags of it when we were making this record.
Yeah, probably like 4 kilos or something.
Yeah, that's good. I'm not, I probably should have gone first with this question because I like it pretty strong. I'm not super picky. I use a French press at home. I don't have the skill, the knowledge, or the tools to make like really good coffee. So, but I live 2 blocks from an Italian grocery store and cafe, which is a real institution, an Edmonton institution. It's been around since the 60s. And that's where I get coffee at least once a day, generally. And they make good espressos and Americanos.
Wow. Pardon me for the ponder, but that is a dream come true. I've always wanted to live steps away from a great cafe or coffee shop.
It really is a beautiful thing. And, you know, Edmonton is a pretty typical, like what you call like a Midwestern mid-sized city, meaning that it's not every part of town is super walkable and has like loads of little shops really close by to wherever you are. Like it's not that kind of city. So I feel extra lucky to live, you know, walking distance from a nice little grocery store, which is also a cafe. Like it's pretty great.
Dana, you and Harry, Secondhand Dream Car is not the first iteration of just you two. You've got some history. You've got the chemistry just between the two of you. And Harry produced, let's go back to the How Much Muscle record, the Sammy Volkov classic country duet record, which is I'd like to dedicate an entire episode to that one. Tell me about your friendship and how it's all come together here for Secondhand Dream Car.
Yeah, well, that's a good way of putting it. It does feel like a bit of a culmination because we've been working together for like 10 years. I think it is 10 years now. I think we might have passed
10 years.
Yeah, we passed it. Yeah. Because actually Harry produced my last 3 albums. So the one before How Much Muscle and the one before that, which we recorded in 2013. So yeah, long, long history there. And when I do my own Dana Wiley thing and make those records, I play with a bass player named Keith Rempel, who is just great. So Harry and I had never, like, not that we had never played together, but it wasn't a thing. Harry didn't play bass with me as well as he just produced my records. And we were friends. So, well, Harry, do you want to tell the origin story of how the band became a thing?
Should we do our origin story as friends and colleagues first?
Oh, sure. You want to do that?
We can go back.
Okay. why not?
My dad ran an open stage in Edmonton. And when Dana was still, I think, based out of England, but touring here with her band from the UK, it was my birthday on a Wednesday night when my dad had his open stages. It was Wednesdays, right?
Yeah, at the Little Flower. Yeah.
At the Little Flower.
Yeah.
And I met Dana there. There was sort of like a little bit of an air about her, this amazing musician coming from, you know, who was from here, had gone to college here, but was out and about touring the world, and that she was pretty heavy at the time. And I was like very young, very, very young, playing guitar. And I remember we were both jamming in some set with someone, and I was taking a solo on the guitar, and Dana was taking a piano solo or something. There's some sort of like confusion about who was soloing. And I just thought Dana hated me. I was just sure Dana hated me. She doesn't remember this at all.
Even I've been told this story so many times, and I still have no recollection of this moment at all, let alone how I felt in it. Or I certainly don't have any memory in my past at all of being super. It's so funny because like I was apparently like built up in Harry's mind at this time, but I was pretty young myself and not feeling, you know, I didn't feel like I was like some shit hot musician, you know, and like there was no way that me in that context that I would be feeling so confident in myself that I'd be like, how dare you step over my solo? like that's not where I was at. So that's an interesting thing about how people feel about themselves, I guess.
Yeah, nobody ever thinks they're all that in the moment for sure. Or like people who are don't anyways. So I think about a week later, Dana was playing with her band at this festival in Alberta called the North Country Fair. And I was there, and I don't actually recall if it was this summer or the next summer that I offered to guitar tech for you.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's when I saw you play with your band for the first time. And I was just like immediately like so impressed and was like a legitimate fan. So we started to like get to know each other a little bit over that. And I remember going to Dana's album release for her, your third record.
Yeah.
Something's going to happen.
It's going to happen here.
Yeah. That one. And, I just thought it was so great. And I bought all of her albums, and then we just sort of saw each other a little bit peripherally over the next while. Not too long after that, things kind of fell apart with your band and you moved back here to go to back to school to do your master's, and you had Anna.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know why you asked me to make your record. I was like super new at making records. I wasn't making them when Dan and I first met. I was like, that was not a thing. I didn't have a studio. I was not recording.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't. So I don't know what made Dana ask me, but I'm sure glad that she did. Probably had no business making an album for her, but it was really cool because I was like an actual fan. Dana was the first person I got to work with who was like, I was a fan of hers beforehand.
Yeah, but it was perfect, I think, because you were super new at making records. And in a way, I was super new too. It was my fourth album, but I had made my first three records with my band, one of whom anyway was highly creative and extremely opinionated Englishman, who was also my partner for the time that we had that band together. So he really like he dominated the process. He generally, when we were recording, he dominated the process in terms of a lot of the artistic decisions that were being made because of sheer force of personality. So, and that, you know, I was just so used to being in that format with that band. I did feel when I came out of that, not only did I feel like my whole life had fallen apart and I was starting all over again, but I felt like I felt quite green. So in a way, like for us to make that record together, when you were pretty new at that process and I was kind of new in this one way, I feel like it means that we have learned a lot together through all the albums that we've now made together. Like it feels nice. Very, you know.
Dana, do you think that maybe at that time, and you had the belief in Harry that he wasn't quite sure himself, but you were also thinking, I want to choose somebody who I can get along with in a studio for hours on end. And like you said, drawing on that last experience, which was kind of with a controlling personality, and you're like, I want the anti-version of that. Is that kind of what you were thinking? Like, I just, chemistry or...
Yeah, to be honest, I don't remember what I was thinking because I have no recollection. Like, I have, you will have gathered already, I have a terrible memory. I really don't remember, but that sounds like me, you know, like, yeah. It sounds like, because for me, it was always about that, like who do I, it was never about like who's the producer who's going to like get me to the next level of my career or who's really going to like push me in this way. It's like, for me, it's always been about who do I feel like gets me and I get it, and we get along well, and we're going to have a really nice, joyful time making something together. That's always for me. So probably that was it. I just don't remember. So I shouldn't say that I remember because I don't.
Well, if you're listening to the show and you want some background, we'll cover some of it, a lot of it here, but ckua.com, indiemusicdiscovery.com, a lot of good stuff on Secondhand Dream Car, but I just kind of want to branch off here and talk about all nine of you getting together and how this happened. And it was kind of accidental. Started with a need for a house band, and it was coming off of COVID. There wasn't a lot of work, a lot of opportunities at that time anyway, and it almost like it accidentally came to be. And then I follow you guys on Instagram, and you can see a lot visually with a group of artists. It's one thing if they make good music together, but when you see people laughing and you see people like together and they are clearly enjoying each other's company, they're sitting down and breaking bread together. That always gets my attention, warms my heart. I'm interested in finding out more about them. It's like, man, they really must have caught lightning in a bottle here. But I want to kind of run down the list here of the other members of the band. Jamie Cooper from Up and Over Trio and the Obsessions Octet on drums. If I mispronounce the name here, just let me know. Kyle Masuk.
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 From the Hello Darlings.
Most people say Mosiak, so you did better than most.
Yeah, you were better than most.
Chad Murphy with Dallas Smith on guitar, Rooster Davis on organ. Here's a name I'm familiar with from talking to Dana a few months ago. Dave Babcock leads the horn section, and I think I'm missing a few names, but a lot into my comment here in question, but how cool is it to have something that happened almost because of the times to be where it is now, and to be on, you know, the new single is out, the new record coming out October 11th.
Honestly, everything that has happened since this band has taken a life on its own has happened fairly quickly, and not without us having to, like, you know, put in thought and effort. Certainly there's been a lot of effort put in, but it just sort of goes. We're always just trying to catch up on everything that needs to be done for the next thing that is happening. And I mean, it's pretty exciting. It's pretty cool that this has all sort of come about, and like the personnel, even though in some ways it's kind of seems like strange that all of these people came together for this one thing, and also feels quite kismet when you look back at how it all happened. It was very, very organic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It does feel, you know, because at least the core of the band, namely me and Harry and Jamie, the drummer, you know, because we came together as the house band for this, what was called a pro jam that was happening. That happened weekly for about a year and a half, I think. And, you know, we came together for that because we were all, it was Jamie who was in charge of hiring everyone for that band. So he asked us to do it. And it was through playing together every week that we really realized what chemistry we were starting to have. And so it was kind of a beautiful, fortuitous and unique situation where to kind of realize that you're a band as opposed to decide that you're a band or that you're going to be a band. You know, it was just, we were just kind of like, oh, I think this is happening. And then the effort starts to go in because you go, okay, well, if this is happening, then we should have original material. We should make records. We should try to get these other gigs that aren't this one gig. And so then suddenly you're doing it and you're investing a lot of time and resources and money inevitably.
We're like, we should have a horn section. So we have a horn section, you know?
Right. We, I think what we were starting to do, it was very clear what, like, stylistically and genre wise, what kind of band we were going to be, just because like we were all in such immense agreement always about what songs we wanted to cover when we were doing covers. And so we were like, it just kind of came together like that. And when it did, it was kind of like, this is a horn section-y kind of a band, right? Like,
yeah. I think we like do 8 Tedeschi Trucks Band songs.
Yeah. Because after, so we started off as the house band at the Soho Pro Jam, which meant that we, you know, we did the top and the tail of every night, but most of the night was taken up by different ensembles getting up and playing songs. But we turned that gig into just a house residency gig at another club called Blues on White, where rather than playing, you know, a little bit at the beginning and end of the night, we were suddenly playing 3 1-hour sets once a week. So when we started doing that, that's when we developed a pretty large sack of material that we did. And, you know, by that time we had a lot of our originals under our belts as well, and we're doing those, but yeah, so we've got a lot of cover songs that we do, and yet 8 of them are Tedeschi Trucks Band songs. Florida band.
Yeah. Yeah. Very familiar down here. It's one thing, you know, for a band of this size that pulls in people from very contrasting genres sometimes. I think Indie Music Discovery talked about, you know, this is a sonic departure for a lot of the band members as far as creating new music. So it's one thing to get a group on stage to really gel and put on a good show performing covers, but I'm just amazed. When I first heard Eight of Spades, the first single, and folks, if you haven't heard it, I've said this before, but please pause the episode and add it to your catalog, stick it on your playlist. And Dana and Harry, it sounds like a song that when you hear it, you're like, I feel like I've known this song for years. And how did this, it's just a similar quality to the new single, Lay Down the Load, where you kind of get that slow head bopping, you know, you're squinting, you're grinning, you're like, yeah, okay, all right. And it's got that flavor. There's something magical is going on here.
Yeah, it kind of feels like that. I guess the main thing to be said about like how all of these songs, all the songs from the whole record, how they came about. We essentially, once we realized we needed to write a record, because we actually received grant money, like municipal government grant money to make the record. Once we got that, we were like, okay, now we better write a bunch of songs. So, you know, we got together and had sessions. Like often it was just me and Harry because we seemed to be able to carve out the most time to do it. So we'd get together and sometimes it would be the two of us. Sometimes it would be us and Jamie. Sometimes it would be the three of us plus Kyle, one of the guitarists. It just depended on who was available. And we get together and often someone would have like some little thing that they like in one case, Kyle had like a guitar lick that he had been holding on to for years and it just never was going anywhere. In the case of Eight of Spades, I had the chorus or most of the chorus, and Harry and I got together and if that was just the two of us, we came up with it. And out of every single session that we did in that regard, we came out with one exception. We came out with a song that is now on the record. There's one exception, which might, you know, which might be on the next record because it's not that we rejected it. It just didn't quite fit. So that feels extremely fortuitous. You know, I don't know how it is for most bands, but we certainly felt very, very lucky to, you know, we didn't, I don't know if we had that expectation. I think we just thought, well, we need to try to write some stuff. So let's, you know, get together regularly and try to make that happen. I think it was certainly surprising to me that we came out with something capable every single time we did that. It's amazing, you know?
It's exactly what I expected.
You're the mastermind. Yeah. And for me, it was a real revelation because I've always written by myself. And generally, anytime it's been suggested to me in the past where maybe you want to co-write with me or, you know, whoever might be saying that, I'm always like, no, the idea of it has never appealed to me because I'm just like, because for one thing, I don't want to be put on the spot in the moment. I want to let a song unfold in its own time, but also like, I don't want to have to take someone else's input necessarily, you know, like, so for me that, like, I feel like now I understand what co-writing is all about. Like all the benefits of creative dialogue as opposed to just being one entity. I very much understand the great creative benefits of that now.
I feel like with co-writing, or if in the past maybe you would have an aversion to it or anybody would, like for me, I could see myself not wanting to offend somebody and not really trying to tell them, hey, your stuff's not up to snuff, but like this is where, these are my standards and this is what you're bringing in. And like, just almost like a fear of having to say, no, I'm not using that. I'm using what I've got. But it almost seems like with this group, there's a comfort level that you can sink into a little bit, if I'm describing it correctly, where, you know, everybody around you is on the same level of, if not like everybody's raising everybody else's.
I think that's true. Yeah.
And I think that we certainly, Harry and I have, like, we know each other well enough and we've been working together long enough that there isn't necessarily that layer of like, oh, you know, if I really don't like that idea, but I don't want to say, like, we don't really have that. Like, we
just, yeah, we would just both say it to each other. Very
yeah.
Quickly.
Yeah.
And the other person like, wants to accept that.
Yeah. Yeah. We know how to have healthy arguments. We always have. I don't feel like that's a skill we developed. I think we've always just had it. We've always been able to do that.
Yeah, I think that's true. I feel like we maybe have more arguments now, but they were always good.
Yeah, I think we do. I think that's just a quantity thing. We're spending more time together now and working on more things.
Yeah.
So we're having more arguments.
Yeah. But they're always good arguments.
Yeah. Yeah.
Productive. I mean, I think that's a big part of collaboration. And I talk about it when I'm making records with people all the time, certainly in front of the band. But like, you know, arguments are going to happen and people are going to be passionate about them. But when they do, it's usually because there's something that needs to get worked out. And if you put in the effort to argue about it, you're invariably going to come up with something that is, should we do this or this? I argue for this. Dana argues for that. We try them both and we find the right thing to do because we went through these motions. You know, it's important. It's an important part of collaboration. You can't collaborate effectively if you are just constantly agreeing. I don't know. I don't think you can anyways.
And I guess you have to be okay with sometimes, all right, well, what I brought to the table, it's just not going to end up on the record. But I'm okay with that because this makes sense for what we're trying to do for this song. I guess you have to have everyone's buy-in to the greater project.
That's really important when making records, that the goal is always to do what is going to serve the song. You know, and if ideally, if everyone is on that same page, then no one's going to get too fussed about their idea being used or not, because in working together, that we know we all want the same thing in the end, which is to serve the song, because the songs kind of have their own life. They have, it's like almost like songs have things that they want and they have a way that they want to be.
Now, I want to mention one more thing on Eight of Spades. I could talk about this song for 30 minutes because I've listened to it back to back to back to back. I think I saw somebody else or another article that described Eight of Spades as a repeat type of track. I think you guys described it as a song about finding satisfaction in whatever life has to offer at any given moment, and also about watching someone struggle in that dance with life and loving them for it. That's from indiemusicdiscovery.com. Very relatable subject matter there. And then I think later on, Harry describes, as far as lyrics, that you guys are trying to offer up something with some meat on it to people who are close listeners of lyrics, which I am. I'm a lyric guy. Some people, I've never understood this, but I'm at peace with it, that there are some music fans who almost ignore the lyrics and they're all in for the music. I have friends like that. I don't understand, but so yeah, I love that.
Mm-hmm. That's really important to me because I got to sing the words, so I want them to be good.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people, Dan, that you don't understand. Like, I do love lyrics, but like, it's not why I get into songs. Like, it's like the treat that I get from a song once I've loved it for a while and have listened to it a lot, then I really start to settle in with the lyrics. Otherwise, I tend to only notice lyrics when they're super cringy.
Like, yeah.
You know, so, you know, I think it's part of the reason why Dana and I have a good partnership, because I know that there's always going to be good substance there when Dana's handling that. You know, I don't have a lot of poetic bones in my body. So together we're kind of covering our bases on that.
Yeah. There's a complementarity of skills there because there's a way and a level on which you listen to the sounds that I'm not doing because I'm focused on the overall aesthetic that comes through, and the lyrics are such a big part of that for me. We hear differently, we hear different things, and that's part of what makes it all work.
Yeah.
Now, moving on to Lay Down the Load, which this is available now wherever you download music. I heard this song for the first time this morning and heard a snippet of it, I guess, a couple weeks ago when you guys shared the video on Instagram. Everyone's kind of looking at each other in the studio. Tell me about that song, maybe the meaning or anything you'd like to share about Lay Down the Load.
I mean, meaning-wise, this song, unlike any other song on the record, came out of a bunch of lyrics that I had written down. I don't even know how long ago. I just found it. I was, for some reason, going through an old notebook and found that I had written down. I don't even know if I intended them to be song lyrics. It was just some thoughts that I had written down when I was just struggling with, you know, like anxiety around certain things and just feeling, you know, like I tend to, when I feel anxiety, and I feel like most people in the modern world do, because we live in a crazy anxiety inducing world. But for me, it's often around like in my relationships, it's like, am I doing okay? Did I do something wrong? Did I say something wrong? Are things okay? You know, just like, and as I've done my work over the years, it's like you can start to bring some awareness to where those thoughts are coming from. And that a lot of the, you know, for me, because I'm lucky enough to be materially safe in my life, like all of my basic needs are met. Often when I'm struggling and I'm suffering, especially with something like anxiety, it's because of shit that I'm just worrying about, you know. It's not always rooted in reality. But you can know that and not be able to put down the way that's physically ruling you. And so the words came out of a great desire to just be able to, it's like all this stuff that is causing you suffering. Like I could see, I can just put this down. Like I could just put it down. I am choosing to carry it, you know? And so that's where the words came out of. And I found them when we were in this period of writing a lot. And so I sat down at the piano and I think I had a sense of sort of what it could be. And when I sat down at the piano, it all just kind of came together in probably 10 minutes. And then the next day we had a rehearsal, a songwriting session with the band. So I brought it to everybody and within maybe a half an hour, we had fleshed it out. And that was the song.
We actually, that was our last session that we had. I mean, really it was our one sort of full rehearsal pre-production session we had for the album.
That's right.
Yeah. So it was right before we went into record. And Dana was like, okay, I got this new song just happened. It was in my notebook and I figured out I'm going to bring it. We got to have it on there. And I was like, I think we're sorted. Like we don't, you know, it's like, no, we got to try it. Dana was totally like, we've got to do it. It wants to be on the album. And we just tried it in that rehearsal. And that was us trying to go through all the songs that weren't totally fleshed out yet that we hadn't played a lot. And the other thing we were doing is we had our Wednesday night residency gig the night before the studio. So this must have been on like a Tuesday or something like that before we went in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we were like, let's try and get songs ready so we could try and play them in front of a crowd one time before we go record them. So I don't know. None of our sessions were long. I don't think we ever spent more than 2 hours working this out. So half an hour for that song to flesh it out was maybe generous considering we're going through all of the tunes in that rehearsal. It just happened so fast. It just wanted to be what it wanted to be. And everyone, you know, probably everybody weighed in with a little bit of a suggestion and it just happened very quickly. And I don't think we made any major changes in the studio. There was more overdubs on this song than there were on probably any other songs, just because we sort of did that vocal layering in the kind of gospel-y a cappella part. And it's actually also like we do have acoustic guitar on a few songs on the album, but this is the one that the acoustic was an overdub. So there's actually three guitars on it instead of the normal two.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really excited go ahead.
No, I was just saying I kind of went on a tangent there. Sorry.
It's all right.
After I went on a tangent, double tangent.
Yeah. But I think that's really relatable, Dana, going back to your lyrics, something that I've had to deal with, and probably a lot of people do. If you already have anxiety that kind of keeps its grip on you in normal times, wow, it's been quite a ride for a lot of people for the past 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to beat back at it.
It's true.
I remember like going for a walk a few months ago, and sometimes it'll hit me sometimes. And so there's nobody around, and I just started talking to my fear or talking to my anxiety. And I said something like, "You're not in control." And I said it like very forcefully, and I just kept walking. And I like, I could feel myself like gaining control. And I was like, "Oh, that was, yeah, that was fun. That actually worked."
Yeah. You objectify it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah.
I like that.
Couple things. I want to like catch so much before we get too deep in the episode. The website, secondhanddreamcar.com. I know like already people can order t-shirts, a couple different t-shirt varieties, and a trucker hat. And I am in love with this maroon shirt. So when you see an order come in from Pensacola, Florida, that's me.
All right.
Who did you guys have any input on the design here? Or did you put this in somebody's hands and said, just, hey, kick out something cool?
Yeah. Well, the t-shirt design is basically the album cover artwork, like that, or the outline of it. And that was done by our friend Kendall Kinahan, who actually did the artwork for my last two albums as well. And is just a brilliant graphic designer, really a multi-talented artist. Yeah. Yeah.
She's amazing.
Yeah. She's totally amazing. And so, you know, we had the idea, somehow the idea came about when we were thinking about what we might want to do for album artwork, because we knew that Answer the Call, which is one of the songs on the album, was going to be the title of it. We just conceived of the idea of the cover being like a line drawing of it, of an old school telephone, because Answer the Call. And so, yeah, we kind of dialogued with Kendall a bit about how to make that happen. And yeah, and she just did her magic. And that's that.
Another thing, I know you've talked about this a few times in the press already, but the story on the band name, I reread it again today, and I thought to myself, this sounds like something that you would have read in like a tell-all novel when a long-established band has talked about how something happened in 1972, or it sounds like something out of a movie. It's like so simple, so cool, but I can like picture the moment where you guys look at each other like, oh, that's kind of a cool name for a band. anybody want to retell that story?
Sure. Particular night in question, I think it was probably March of 2023. And Jamie, the drummer, and I had gone to the hockey game. We went and saw the Oilers play. It wasn't the Oilers against the Panthers. but after the game, we went to Soho, which was the club that we did our jam at, the pro jam. And I guess, yeah, we were still doing it there. But on Tuesday nights, they had a sort of different format jam there. So we thought we'd go by and see our friends who were there and listen to that. And it was hosted at the time by our friend Emmett Van Etten and I think it was Paul Steffes. They were hosting the jam. And Dana said she'd come meet us there. So she came and met us there. And we're just sitting there having beers, maybe eating some pizza. And Emmett's introducing this young man who'd been living with him and his wife and talking about how he had just purchased his dream car. And the kid sort of got out of the mic and said, well, you know, it's not really a dream car. It's like, it's a bit of a beater. It's secondhand, he said. And Emmett said, well, secondhand dream car. And we were looking for band names, and we'd gone back and forth on a few things. And I think it's actually pretty hard to name a band. And we just, let's use that band name. That's it. That sounds like a band name. And we sort of settled on it for a little bit. And then we also went back and forth on it a few more times. And then when we were starting our gig at the Commercial Hotel, the weekly gig, we were getting some press, and we really needed to settle on a band name and be like, that's it for good, because it's out there now. They're playing our demos on the radio. We kind of have to stick with something. So that's it. Secondhand Dream Car. That's who we are.
When you just look at it on paper, it just looks, I hear the name and I read the name and I'm like, how is that not already taken? It's like a website domain. Like, how is that still available? It's so awesome. Secondhand Dream Car. It just works. And then you can, I guess, locally, do people just refer to you guys as Dream Car? Or do you call yourselves Dream Car?
Yeah, I'm trying to start the Dream Car. I'm trying to refer to us as the Dream Car. Like,
Rooster was doing that too. Dream Car.
What's that?
Rooster started doing that like last September.
calling us the dream car?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even know that. But yeah, that's, yeah. I like that. I hope that catches on.
Nice. And a lot of abbreviations where we just go SHDC. Nobody calls us that, but you write it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good abbreviation. Useful.
Now, with the size of the group, I understand it probably is challenging to really set out on a huge regional tour. Have you thought ahead, like, what does the next spring of 25 look like? Do you guys really set out plans for 6 months out, a year out? Do you kind of know what you're planning to do next as far as, like, either just writing, recording, or trying to put something out on the road?
Well, we're sort of working after that. We've very much still been playing catch up to the momentum that this is creating on its own. And I think that's going to kind of keep happening for a while too, because of the size of the ensemble. Like you mentioned, it is difficult to take the band on the road. It's just very expensive. So, you know, we're kind of hoping that we can make a bit of a name for ourselves and get some attention and play a good number of festivals and get our show in front of people. So it'll be easier for us to know that we have an audience when we go traveling. I think it's going to happen. I don't think we're going to be embarking on any, you know, worldwide tours anytime soon. Maybe not ever, you know. It's the kind of thing where we probably go on a run for a few weeks playing gigs regionally or within a region. But, you know, the reality is that we all have a lot of things going on. And we want this band to be a very big part of what we all have going on. But, you know, I've got the studio, people have children and wives and mortgages, and we're probably not going to go on the road for extended stints anyways. So we just want to try and make it so that it's more realistic for us to go and play some new markets on a semi-regular basis.
Yeah. And, you know, there's definitely a goal for next summer to be busy playing festivals, because summer just in Western Canada, there are so many festivals that fill up the summer. We're hoping to have a good summer of that next year.
Yeah. And then we have a long-term bucket list gig of actually playing the Susan and Derek summer bash.
Yeah.
Down in Florida, Dan.
Is that right?
Derek Trump and Susan Tedeschi. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they put on a 3-day little music festival around their band, and where exactly in Florida, I'm not sure.
They live in Jacksonville, but, I think. I don't know if it's...
Yeah, I think that's right. That's right. They have it. So, yeah, hopefully someday we can get their attention and they'll want us to play that.
Well, that'd be a long-term. Yeah, I'm I was like the extreme Northwest Florida, and Jacksonville is on the Atlantic coast, but it's drivable. Mm-hmm. So if you guys are playing there, I'm clear in my calendar.
Well, all right.
Yeah, possibly several years from now, we'll be getting into that.
And speaking of festivals, so this episode will be released on the 18th, and you guys are performing at the Edmonton Blues Festival this coming Sunday.
That's right.
You've played now back on the 2nd, the rooftop concert. I want to get your thoughts on how much fun that was.
It was amazing. It just couldn't have worked out better. You know, my friend Dan lives on it's an apartment building. In Chinatown, Edmonton, which is a pretty...
That's right, Dan.
Like how I perked up there. Anytime I hear Dan, I'm like,
oh, Dan. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that might be an interesting one to talk to. He's an interesting Dan. Yeah, so this walk-up apartment building, it's one of the, in Chinatown in Edmonton, which is like very much encompassed by probably the roughest, sketchiest part of town. There's one really lovely old brick building that remains, like a 3-story brick building from, you know, I think it was built in around 1908 and is still in really good shape and has nice apartments in it, and it's got a really nice rooftop patio. So it was actually Dan's idea to, because Dan's have good ideas, you know, to have us do this concert. Exactly. And so we, you know, but you know, you plan something like that, you don't know how the weather's going to be. There are all these unknown factors, and it just came off perfectly. Like the weather was just like, it almost stormed. Like it was like a storm was threatening to the extent where it made the sky look really amazing, but then it didn't actually rain on us at all, which was good because we had all this exposed sound gear. So it really just couldn't have gone more perfectly. But also we had our friend Dale, who's a videographer, come and take a lot of footage from the concert. And so when you see the video that is coming out for that, it probably by the time this is broadcast, it will be out and available for viewing. The video that accompanies Lay Down the Load, the single, has footage from us playing at this rooftop concert. So you can actually see just how beautiful the whole setting for it was. It was great.
Well, I really enjoyed the first video for Eight of Spades. So I can't wait to see Secondhand Dream Car visually and take in more of that aesthetic. Once again, quoting Indie Music Discovery, where Dana said, "Musically, we work to engender joy and collaboration, collectivity, collegiality. We love writing and playing music together, and our songs are an embodiment of that." I see that word joy, and I just think that there's no shortage of that that people are looking for in their music. Just from my own perspective, I think that you are doing something to help people cope through music, I guess.
Well, that's for me, that's the best compliment we could get.
Agreed.
Yeah, because driving around, all I've had, you know, people have been following the band Eight of Spades is what you've been rocking for the past few weeks. And I was thinking about this yesterday. I'm glad I remembered to say it, but it's kind of like no matter what kind of day, week, chapter of your life that you're having, when you listen to that song, it's like, I want to connect with this band because it's going to set you straight for the moment, for the day, for the hour, whatever.
Sweet. And can we quote
that's nice. I want to, yeah, definitely want to quote that.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. That's really well put. Thank you.
You're welcome. And going back to what I said at the top of the episode, a lot of it also has to do with you guys are not trying to sell the idea that you're having fun, that you like each other's company. It comes across and that's just golden. So
it's real. It's real.
Wow.
Yeah, every Wednesday getting together to play a gig that we used to do. It's unfortunate that when we're doing what we're trying to do now, that's not really a feasible thing for us to do anymore. But just, you know, going and seeing your friends and getting to make beautiful music together. And every time we get together, it's just like joy is really the word, because, you know, we show up to work, but like there's so much joy in it for us. So hearing that that's coming across to people is really special.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
It's like, it's working.
Yeah. Well, I'm delighted to give you exposure to my listeners. I tell everybody on the show that this, you know, keep listening, because you're going to hear musicians that would not have come across or may not have come across your Spotify recommendation or the algorithm. And I haven't steered you the wrong way yet. So this is another great band. Really one of my favorites.
Thank you. And I want to say we appreciate your authenticity too. It's the same thing that you discover things in your own way, you know, based on these. We talked about this last time, that there's something about the randomness, about the parameters that you set with, like, looking for people whose names start with Dan, you know, yeah. or are Dan, and that it leads you to places the algorithm would never lead you to. And that the enthusiasm that you then feel about what you discover is genuine. It's not because you've been sold it. It's because you have a genuine connection with it. And that's that same real authenticity. And you're putting that out into the world. So, yeah.
Well, yeah. Thank you, Dana. I just encourage everybody to kind of look in some odd corners for things that might interest you or delight your senses. I had no idea starting this project that I would find such variety and really add to my catalog. Now the D section of my catalog is very inflated. That might be a problem.
So this is helping in that regard.
This is a huge help.
Now you've got an S. Yes.
It's going to drive me crazy not to make mention, just because the two of you paired up for the Sammy Volkov record, The Day Had to Come. So I want to mention that. Something special there too. I mean, just a classic country, like a bygone country sound that you and Sammy connected on. And I think you were fans of each other going back a few years. And Harry produced that record, engineered and produced that record.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, that was kind of no-brainer. That kind of came together in its own way too, because I mean, Sammy, I made all these records with Harry. Sammy's first record was produced by Harry, so there was history with them too. And and you know, Harry was, you were there right from the conception of the, you know, just the idea of doing a record of country duets in that classic style. You were there right from the beginning, so it was much more, you know, much more than might often be encompassed in a producer engineer credit. Like Harry was really one of the co-creators of the whole album from conception to execution.
I just didn't write songs or sing them, except for some bump bumps.
Right, yeah, bump bumps, the all important bump bumps. Yeah.
You know, you don't hear Roy Orbison's name floated around in 2024, but Sammy kind of reminds me a little bit of a modern Roy Orbison.
Mm. He gets that a lot.
Yeah, totally.
I was introduced to him as a, I don't know if I was 12 or 14, with listening to that, this is going to drive me nuts, the super group with Tom Petty and George Harrison.
Well, Traveling Wilburys.
Yes, that was my introduction to Roy Orbison, and he was my favorite from the group.
Oh, well, he was the best singer of the group by far,
yeah.
Quite a long shot, yeah.
Great band.
Classic voices. Yeah, great band.
I love those albums so much.
Well, you guys have been terrific. As usual, these things go a little long, but I always hope that it's been enjoyable for my guest, because I can start rattling off question after question, but that's just because I love sinking my teeth into this stuff and just can't wait for, what is it, October 11th. Can't get here fast enough, folks. Pre-save the album. It's called Answer the Call, appropriately titled, and get on the website before the album is released. If you just like wearing, you need a new hat. Be honest with yourself. Look in your closet, your collection, the top of your dresser, those hats, you've had them for years. Get a new hat on that head of yours. I'm a big hat fan. I've been a huge hat fan since I was a child. So be placing an order for that. Get on the website, secondhanddreamcar.com. They're on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. I think TikTok as well.
Yep. The old tick in the talk.
Yeah. And tell your friends about them.
Sweet.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you both, Dana and Harry, for being here today. Anything else that you'd like to plug or promote that I may have missed?
Before the album comes out, we're going to have a couple more singles dropping. So keep your eyes and ears peeled for that.
All right.
Yep.
Well, best to you guys, and hope I get a chance to see you live sooner rather than later. And this has been fantastic. And we have to do a third episode, because I'm sure there'll be something to talk about.
Anytime.
All right, that's it for this episode of Dan Time. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend about it. Follow me on the socials. I'm on most of them, not all of them. And do something nice for yourself today and start with Lay Down the Load. If you're kind of having just an off day, or you're off to a slow start, add that song, play it, listen to it, and off you go. We'll see you next Sunday on the Dan Time Podcast. Thank you, Dana Wiley and Harry Gregg. Have a wonderful day. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Dan.
Lay it all down.